Okay. Carla, you ready? Welcome to the June 27th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Fish, Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Let's take up first the consent calendar, and there's been a request to pull item 643 and hear it separately. Any other requests to remove items from the consent calendar? So let's take a vote on the balance of the consent calendar minus item 643.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Commissioner Novick, you want to prepare us for 643
yes,
here?
Yes, item 643. Actually, Carla, do you want to read the title?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Accept a grant from the Federal Highway Bridge Program for $3.392 million and to authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation to rehabilitate the historic Northwest Thurman Street Bridge 25B15 over McClay Park.
And I ask for this to be taken off the consent agenda just because, well, partly because it's not every day we get $3 million, so it's worth taking a moment to enjoy that, but also just thought it would be valuable for David Olongre to give a brief description of the project. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor? Here today to
please state your name for the record. Sorry.
My name is David Olungi, City of Portland Bridge Engineer, here today to talk about Northwest Thurman Street Historic Bridge. I have a PowerPoint presentation which I would like to present to you. Bridge was built in 1905. Here's an original drawing from the original as-builds showing the bridge in its full glory. That's how it looks today. You only get to see a short section of it now because of all the trees that have grown up around it in the park, Lower McClay Park. Here's the project location, Northwest Thurman Street between 29th and 32nd, right at the entrance to Lower McClay Park. What we show in this map also is the detour that will be needed, which I can get to later again, but when we're rehabilitating the bridge. That will require a full closure. Here's the other site plan when the bridge was built first from the Lewis and Clark Exposition. The bridge, which you see in the red bar at the bottom left-hand corner, overlooks the site of the original exposition in 1905 for the World's Trade Fair. And that's how it looked in 1904, as imagined by an Oregonian artist. And that's how they built it.
Is that a streetcar?
Yeah, it was a streetcar, by God.
Yes, it was built for trolley. It served the Thurman trolley line up to Willamette Heights. Two spans, 160 foot over Balch Creek, and a shorter span of 60 foot over what was then a trail into Balch Creek area. And it is actually Portland's historic bridge. It is eligible to be on the National Register, which means it has the full protection as a bridge that is on the National Register of Historic Places. And it is our oldest bridge in this whole region, in fact. Not only is it a historic bridge, but it's kind of an antique bridge also. They certainly don't make them like this anymore. It's a handmade bridge. By that I mean all the steel elements that you see were all riveted together by taking smaller parts and riveting to make a larger part and then assembling them by hand in 1905. Today it's a two-lane bridge plus sidewalks, but it also contains a large amount of timber. Timber stringers, timber deck, timber sidewalk, and they all sit on the riveted old steel floor beam. These members have deteriorated substantially over time in the last 100 years. There's a view underneath where all the members I just mentioned. The timber stringers and the riveted steel beam are deteriorating rapidly because of the deck that allows water to penetrate annually, continuously. The pavement is in extremely poor condition because the deck shrinks and contracts constantly because it's timber. And the sidewalk itself is also in poor condition, which doesn't help joggers when they're jogging in the winter, which is a very important and route for recreational joggers. It also happens to have the ugliest bridge rail in Portland. And that was actually a modern rail installed in 1960.
Is that a contest Commissioner Novick started?
But this traffic rail that separates the cars from the pedestrians is also very substandard. But it also carries a water line that serves the Willamette Heights. So if ever the bridge did fall into major disrepair, water service to Willamette Heights would be in jeopardy. The bridge is also weight restricted currently. Heavy trucks are not allowed to use it. And one of the reasons is because the timber stringers and the riveted steel floor beam are inadequate to carry modern heavy loads. But the trusses, which carry those members, they're actually quite adequate. We strengthened those about 30 years ago, so the trusses are actually in good shape. So what we're going to do with this project, using the federal money with the city match, is remove all the deck and superstructure you see shaded in red here, but keep the trusses and the towers that support the trusses. And here's another view of the members that are being removed. And they're all going to be replaced. So we're going to replace the timber stringers with new steel Y-flange members. We're going to replace the riveted steel floor beam with a new Y-flange beam. Replace the timber deck with a steel deck with asphalt over it. And replace the wood sidewalk with an aluminum slip-resistant sidewalk. But as I say, the existing trusses are actually satisfactory. And that's what the new bridge will look like, which is not too dissimilar to what it looks like now. So it's a replacement in kind. It will not alter the physical features of the bridge, which is eligible for the National Register and has protection rights. The work just described, new rail for traffic and pedestrians, new sidewalk, and a new water line will go on at the same time. Mm. But the bridge will be closed for 6 to 9 months, starting January or December forthcoming. We're not exactly sure exactly how long, but we think 6 to 9 months is a good estimate. And while closed, there is a small detour along Wilson Street, which is 2 blocks away. There is also a pedestrian detour required, but there are some local trails that the neighbors use right now, which are shorter than using the full-blown detour. So the trails are shown in red, and the longer detour is shown in green for pedestrians. So substantially, the pedestrians should not be substantially affected because of the trail network that's locally. But the park, McClay Park, will remain open during construction. We've worked out a way with Parks Bureau where we can shift users from one side of the park to the other, depending on what's going on during the 6 months. But they'll always have access to the park. So funding summary, it is a total project cost of $3.7 million. Comprising of almost $3.4 million of federal money from the local highway bridge program with a city match of $390,000 approximately.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. I mean, this is one of many, many examples of infrastructure investments that we need to make and a delightful example of an infrastructure investment that we actually have the money to make.
Great. That's great. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this item? I see we have our partners from ODOT here, but they may be here for other reasons.
They may be here for other reasons.
Great. Then let's take a roll call on this.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for the presentation. Aye.
Hales?
Yeah, that's a great presentation, and I hadn't realized it was actually our oldest bridge. It doesn't look like the new railing is going to qualify for the ugliest railing in town, though. That'll have to go to some other bridge. I think we have some
candidates. We'll have to reopen the competition.
Thank you very much. Aye. Okay, so let's move to time certain then. Number 622.
Would you like me to also read 623?
Yes, right. Yeah, 622 and 623. They go together, right.
622, consider the proposal of Backbridge Lofts, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval with conditions to change the comprehensive plan map designations from medium-density dwelling, multi-dwelling, to central residential, and the zoning map designation from R1, multi-dwelling residential, to RX, central residential, with a design overlay at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street, LU131093 05 CPZC, and 623, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street at the request of Backbridge Lofts, LLC, LU131093 05 CPZC.
Mr. Hardy.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, council members. Douglas Hardy with the Bureau of Development Services. This is a continued hearing from about 2 weeks ago when we took a fair amount of testimony and some deliberation by council on the proposal. What council had requested at the end of that past meeting was basically to consider adding some new conditions onto the hearings officer's recommendation to the council, and to have the applicant go back to discuss a height diagram that basically limits the height on the development site. To discuss that with city staff as well as with the neighborhood. The applicant has met several times with both the staff, city staff, as well as the neighborhood. You have, I think, in your packet today a memo from me dated today that identifies the six items that were raised last go-round, and just briefly, the first was to apply a condition that requires development on the site to go through a type 2 design review as opposed to using the community design standards, to require any proposed development to go through what we call a design advice request, and that would be something that the applicant would have to do even before applying for the design review. The third item was to require the traffic signals that were identified by Portland Transportation at Cook and Williams and Cook and Vancouver, basically ensuring that the development is not occupied prior to those signals being installed and operational. The fourth item, as I indicated, was to consider limiting the height of development on the site and ideally stepping it down toward the abutting multi-dwelling R2 zone. Fifth item was to provide for on-site parking, and sixth item was consider allowing a greater amount of commercial space in the building than that allowed by the proposed RX zone. So the memo that I provided to you does identify those conditions. There's a total of six conditions. Of note, there was not a condition included about the minimum on-site parking. Basically, when the applicant first came in with the comprehensive plan zone map amendment proposal, they had no on-site parking spaces that met code at the time. Subsequent to the applicants applying for that comp plan amendment, the city council recently amended the minimum parking ratios for specifically for multi-dwelling. And so at this point, the applicant will be meeting those minimum parking requirements as recently adopted by council. In terms of allowing more commercial space in the development, I think there may have been some unclarity about what the RX zone allows in terms of commercial space under the RX zone. Basically, what the zone says is you can have up to 40% of the total building area in commercial space as long as that commercial space is limited to the first floor. So given the allowed density under the RX, the 4-to-1 floor area ratio of the RX, that would allow them to basically have 100%, if they so desired, to have 100% of the ground floor in commercial space. And if I understood correctly from last hearing, that was one of the concerns, that at least that be allowed for commercial to cover 100% of the floor area. If the applicant wants to go beyond that 40%, there is a path through the zoning code today that basically says you can go through a conditional use review, and we'll evaluate, you know, the impact of that through the conditional use review. So, therefore, staff did not include a condition, a proposed condition, related to commercial uses. And then lastly, we did include a condition that I don't think was at least directly raised by council last 2 weeks ago, and that relates to the minimum required setback between any development that may occur on this site and that abutting R2 zone to the east. The proposed RX zone is the only multi-dwelling zone we have that doesn't require a minimum setback from abutting properties. So I think effectively what the hearings officer had said is he felt comfortable that the design review would adequately address sort of what that minimum setback would be from the abutting R2 zone. in terms of having to meet some of the design guidelines. What staff has done and what the applicant has agreed to do is to provide more certainty for the neighborhood is to require at minimum that there would be anywhere between a 5 and a 14-foot setback, depending on the height of the building, basically, between any development on the site and that abutting R2 zone. So that provides, again, certainty that there would be that minimum setback, and that setback could be increased through the design review if necessary to meet the community design guidelines. So I think I'll leave it there. If council has questions for me now or later, or
all right. Any questions about these proposed additional conditions and the discussions that have taken place to get them before us?
Good. Could I just add one point?
Please.
So in that packet, there is a exhibit identified as I-1. That's the
map.
It's the height diagram.
Diagram, right.
So basically it identifies the height going from 40 feet closest to the abutting R2 zone, going up to 65 feet and an 85-foot height at the northwest corner closest to Williams. That exhibit is from the applicant. You will likely hear from the neighborhood possibly an alternative to that height diagram.
Okay. So. All right. Well, thank you. Well, then what I think we should do is give the applicant a chance to get on the record about the proposed revised conditions, give anyone that wants to testify in favor or against those revised conditions a chance to get on the record. Correct, Catherine?
Yes, I agree. Okay. The one thing the council might want to do is to suggest or recommend that any testimony be directed to the proposed conditions that you are considering and not essentially try to rehear what you heard before 2 weeks ago.
Yes, that's right. No, we had a pretty thorough hearing and a good discussion, and I hope that this is a focused continuation of that. So that's what we intend to do here. So let's give the applicant a chance to come up and get on the record about these proposed conditions or additional conditions and anything else that is relevant.
And Mayor, if I may, what I've been reading from emails, which I've put into the record, the main issue of concern continues to be the height. So if those in favor of the proposed map and those against could be particularly spending time on that issue, I would appreciate it.
Great.
Excuse me, Mayor, before we start, is there a time limit we're giving?
I don't think we're going to need to set strict time limits, given that we're talking about a fairly discrete list of proposed amendments to the conditions. So let's just be reasonable and succinct.
Reasonable. All right.
My name is Ben Kaiser, 5229 Northeast MLK Boulevard, Suite 101, 97211. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Good afternoon, Mayor. Thank you for your time. We wrapped up last meeting 2 weeks ago, and I thought we were at a good place. It felt like we had made a good momentum. And in these last 2 weeks, I've come to realize and appreciate even more the work of council, because the complexities of getting groups to agree to something was very difficult these last 2 weeks, and especially as more voices got included into the conversation just by the opportunity of additional time. And it just made it that much more complex. However, we have taken the plan that we submitted to you at the last moment last 2 weeks ago and placed additional restrictions on it. And you can probably see, I think you have a copy of both the previous one as well as the one we've added additional restrictions to get to where we are today in our proposal. I was unfortunately out of town for the exact 2 weeks since we last met. So Destin Ferdinand, who's with me today, as kind of a wrap-up of the meetings that he attended with both the Neighborhood Association as well as city staff. And I was involved in a couple of those conversations over the phone as we tried to work through these subjects and difficult at times issues. However, we think we're at a plan today that works well for the neighborhood, works well for the project itself, I think works well to address all the issues that we brought up last time about parking and the potential eco-district and all the other things that this project is trying to undertake to move the discussion about Portland and 20-minute neighborhoods and density within urban cores forward. So we're pretty proud of it, but we hopefully will continue to work
and get a resolution. So with that, Destin Ferdun will kind of wrap up the last couple of weeks here.
And I submitted a...
just get your name back in the record.
Sorry. It's Destin Ferdun, yeah. Applicant's representative. I submitted a letter, a written testimony. Hopefully you've all had a chance to review it or take a look at it. I could read just a few parts of it if it's off topic to what you want.
I think we've... Has everybody got the letter?
Yeah.
So, but I guess the critical question for you as the applicant team is that you're in support of these six conditions as described in Mr. Hardy's memorandum.
Yes, we are.
That's correct.
Yep. Tend to follow those, obviously, along with the other conditions that have already been opposed. So.
Right.
So, I don't think you need to articulate what's in the written record. So, questions for the applicant?
So, tell me, why do you think 85 feet is necessary and appropriate for the northwest corner?
I don't think it's necessary as a description. However, I think it actually complements the neighborhood in that, as we, and I might be repeating myself from last time, but I've long felt that intersection to be a gateway to the neighborhood, and I think that zoning requirements, and this is where we touched on last time, the envelopes that are placed by zoning requirements often result in pretty redundant neighborhoods in that developers take up that zoning allowance. So when you say a 65-foot max or a 40-foot max or 45-foot max, what you inevitably end up with is a building that takes up that envelope. And I think what we compromise in those situations is the ability to move around mass to actually help the neighborhood. So when you have an FAR, which we all kind of have had a crash course in that, FAR, and you're trying to move that FAR around on a site, if the mass and the density can move to a corner, so if you push that 65 feet up to 85 feet, in my opinion, what you'll be doing is demarcating a gateway, which I think it is, as well as minimizing the impact on the neighbors who are behind me today, who are here to testify, and who have legitimate concerns about light and shadows and sunlight and views. So when you move masses around, then you benefit them, in my opinion. And that's why I think that by pushing that up, we'll actually make the project better for not only the neighbors, but the project itself and the neighborhood.
But isn't the current height limit 45 under the current zoning?
Under the current zoning.
Current zoning, yeah. Yes, 45.
So you're proposing to go up 65 feet on one side and then 85. What's the height of the building on the other side of Williams? Isn't that New Seasons?
New Seasons, right.
And how high is that going to be?
Probably 26 feet, I'm going to guess.
So how is that a gateway when it's so low on one side and so high on the other side?
Well, maybe on the other side to the north of me when that small building gets developed. Because, again, I think what we have to keep in mind is that we're resolving issues not only for today, but for 50 and 100 years from today. So I think when we're answering these questions amongst ourselves, we've got to be looking down that far down the path and seeing what will infill in the future. So I don't think anybody is excited about EX zoning taking up only 26 feet of its space, being the New Seasons. I think everybody in the kind of planning architectural world would like that to be a denser, higher use area. If we're going to succeed at our comp plan and our future and our high density cores, we have to fill in these cores better. So, and also to say that on that 85 feet tower that we're asking for, and tower I think is a probably an inflated term. Don't forget, please, that I went in for an EX and the neighborhood asked for an RX. So an RX allows 100. So in the 100-foot allowance that the hearings officer and the city planners eventually actually approved and went through, as you know, a pretty long process to get there, that was an RX approval. So we're not asking for 25 additional feet over an EX, we're asking for 15 feet less than an RX. So that's where we came to that 85 foot.
So what's the height limit? Remind me again in EX?
65 feet.
Yeah, so the most we're going to get on the property to the north is 65.
Right.
But then two blocks south, there's an RX zone, which goes up to 100 foot between Vancouver and Williams. So.
And just as a clarification, it's my understanding that the comprehensive plan process, which is happening separately as a follow-up to the Portland plan, wasn't considering rezoning this site, or was it?
That's a good question.
Have you been engaged in that process at all?
Well, it was a long process, but now we'll have to ask Douglas Hardy on that question.
question.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for the applicant? All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And then, do we have a sign-up sheet, Carla? Okay. Good. So
yes.
let's take folks.
These are supporters of the proposal.
Okay.
We have two people: Lee Perlman and Stephen Judkins.
Okay. Come on up. Good afternoon.
My name is Lee Perlman. I live at 512 Northeast Brzee Street. I'm a member of the Elliott Neighborhood Association Land Use Committee, and other members of the committee said that I am uniquely qualified to deliver this today because I was able to show up. What you have before you is a list of the things that we have no official position, but based on recent conversations, the things that the committee reached consensus on, and per your directive just now, I'll concentrate on the height. The consensus was that we felt that over 65 feet is not appropriate for development this close to residents, and that there be adequate setback and step down toward the nearest house. There was some discussion of making that as low as 30 feet. We did not think there was not consensus that was appropriate. I'd like to add one or two personal items, which is that I do not believe that any of the parties to this discussion were dishonest or deliberately deceptive. I do believe that all of them, to some extent or another, failed to fully put their cards on the table in terms of what they expected and what they needed from this. Mr. Kaiser did not. The Elliott Land Use Committee did not. The immediate neighbors did not. In their case, it was because they weren't at the table. And to some extent, that was because we, and I'm part of the we, did not do a sufficiently good job of outreach for this. We sometimes take city to task for not allowing, for not providing adequate outreach and a chance to respond. We sometimes make the mistake of thinking that because we're not city employees or we're volunteers that we're exempt from that kind of consideration. I think that about covers it.
Lee, thank you.
But just to clarify, that the Elliott Land Use Committee would prefer to see a height limit of 65 across the whole property, or 65. Actually, what you state here.
Nothing above 65.
Nothing above 65, and you'd prefer more of a step down towards the east.
Something of a step down, yes.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay, great. Any other questions for Lee?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you and the committee putting your work on this, work into this. Okay, next on the list.
Was there Stephen Judkins?
Hi.
Hi, Stephen.
So
just put your name into the record.
Stephen Judkins, Stephjudkins. I live at Beach and Haight, just a few blocks away. And I apologize I didn't make the last meeting, but I only heard about this plan in the last week or so. And I saw it construed some places online that there was near unanimous support in the local neighborhood that the limit should be under 85 feet. And I want to come out and make it clear that that's not true. Attended the Boys Neighborhood Association meetings for a good amount of time, and the people that represent are largely homeowners, and renters in the area were almost completely absent from these meetings. For whatever reason, they do not come to hearings, do not testify, and their interests generally go underrepresented, this kind of thing. So renter for several years, now I'm a homeowner, but when these kinds of debates happen, generally the interests are the interests discussed are those of immediate neighbors, which is true. It is might not be ideal for them to have a building taller than they like next to it, but missing from the discussion is the impact on rental rates throughout the entire city and in the immediate neighborhood. Portland has, I believe, the second lowest residential vacancy rate in the country right now, and until I purchased a house, I could see rental rates increasing dramatically and pretty quickly. And generally because of that, in most cases, I would tend to support building as many new units as reasonable in neighborhoods where zoning is possible. And whether or not most renters are aware that new construction does help keep prices down, their interests should be represented. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay. And then you have others signed up in opposition to
oppose the proposal. Okay. Right. Five people signed up. The first three are Paul Van Orden, Ray Cully, and Elise Munson. Please come on up.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to try and get the PowerPoint up.
Okay.
Mayor, we would give the principal opponent time, whatever.
If you were the principal opponent, we'll give you some additional time if you need it, Paul. Okay. So
try to walk through it quickly. My name is Paul Van Orden. I've been a resident at 52 Northeast Fremont for the last 16-plus years. Honorable Mayor Hales and members of the City Council, today I'm going to focus on two elements, which are the elements before us. One is why the negotiations fell apart, which is important to help you come to a decision today. And the second is to talk about the massing that we were putting on the table as the neighborhood and some of the land use folks. At the June 13th council meeting, we appeared to be headed in a direction that might set groundwork for a new way for developers and or speculators to collaboratively work with neighbors to add density and vibrant ground floor commercial into the fabric of existing single family neighborhoods. I believe my testimony today as the primary opponent or principal opponent will demonstrate how reasonable we've been and why this project has now spiraled off into the realm of downtown-sized densities inserted into one of Portland's historic and diverse neighborhoods. For the last 20 years, I've gained experience in the environmental law enforcement field to negotiate and solve very tough community issues. I can tell you that I know all too well that when one party starts the negotiations off too aggressively asking for far more than is reasonable, it's very difficult to bring the dialogue back down to earth. In this case, down to an equitable and ethical level of development, working in conjunction with an existing community, not asking for potential massing that offers no compromise to the community. I'm specifically saddened that we had 2 weeks with Mr. Kaiser out of town and a consultant who at many of the meetings was not empowered to negotiate. This set the dialogue completely off track. Let me first start off by helping ground the discussion in a short timeline of the Kaiser development proposals that we've seen. This slide is a picture of the development that Ben brought back to the community in 2005. It was not without concern from the community when it was presented as 39 units, and then was given an almost 20% increase in density through design process to 47 or 48 units. This supposed effective design process gave neighbors no tools to engage in our city. I think this project would have been embraced by the community. Instead, we had zero information until the last minute, and we were told Kaiser had plans to fix our neighborhood's supposed woes. It was just another example of privilege and class coming to rest in Elliott and tell us what we need in our already vibrant community. And so this was a quote from Ben on that project. Kaiser said he chose to call his dual projects Back Bridge to reflect the neighborhood, which serves as a bridge between the freeway and the popular Irvington community. I would like to believe that 16 years ago when I brought my home in Elliott neighborhood, it was not brought in some area of lost souls and non-existent and insignificant single families in their humble homes. It was, as I said at the first council hearing, purchased to be an active part of one of the last neighborhoods that offers true diversity and an abundance of culture for its neighbors. After Kaiser received the sign-off from the city to move forward with the Backbridge Lofts 1, in 2007 the project was shelved and put on hold for 3 years. And this was just a quote from the Neighborhood Association about the project being tabled. At the Elliott Neighborhood Fall General Membership Meeting, October 8th, it was announced, 2007, it was announced the Backbridge Lofts and Backbridge Station projects would be on hold. Kristen Jenkins, who's one of the members, reported that Ben Kaiser has placed the two neighborhood projects on hold for up to 3 years. Understandable with the economy. In the time between the initial proposal and the current 2012 application request for unprecedented mass and upzoning, two more projects from Kaiser worked their way through city staff. One was a project for a series of microhomes on the lot that were off the grid and less than 200 square foot footprint. The second project was a music venue and garden that violated zoning code of Title 33 for commercial operations on a residential lot and also violated the city's noise ordinance with people jamming outside until 10 p.m. These failed projects went by the wayside. They were undertaken with almost no knowledge of the plan's direction or integration into the fabric of our community. Kaiser's record for communicating with the actual impacted neighbors was starting to build a poor record. And now this is about the point where we're moving into the current discussions, and this is a very important element of our discussion today. In the pre-application phase, Mr. Kaiser is quoted in the press, in this case in one of the blogs about architecture and Williams and what's happening. Ben Kaiser of the Kaiser Group is seeking a rezone from R1D to EXD of the current vacant lot on the southeast corner of Fremont and Williams for a revived Backbridge station. The pre-application intake states that the conceptual design includes a 52,000 square foot, 65 foot tall building with ground floor retail office and a 15,000 square foot, 45 foot tall building with the same mix. These two buildings represent another substantial development on the street. I agree with that. In the original perspective that Kaiser offered by Kaiser to the public, he spelled out a massing that would reach his prescribed needs by building, in essence, a building the entire frontage of Williams of approximately, but it would approximately reach back 37 feet off of North Williams into the neighborhood. So in essence, what was prescribed in the pre-app process and the early process and what we all came to the table with was an understanding that we were talking about a volume 65 feet tall that would only go back 37 feet if we put it all the entire mass on Williams. That sounds great. I'm on the board. I'm board with that. Elliott neighbors are actually on board to offer more. Not 100 plus feet, as he stated with the beginning of the negotiations with our community. Obviously, his early plans translated it into a complete 180-degree turn, as we saw a request for massing almost three times in size the volumes he described in the early phases of the discussion with the public. So this slide is the version one we saw from Mr. Kaiser in our discussions and negotiations. And the challenge is, from a cerebral perspective, to get your head wrapped around a flat plan element can be a challenge. And so we tried to look at it and said, I can only see a giant box that's notably larger than the Albert that we're all talking about and two to three times larger than what we originally thought was on the table in the pre-application phase or the discussions with the neighborhood for a 52,000 square foot element. This was the next element or compromise, and I'll go back to the first one for a second, and you'll see very little change other than a downsizing in the corner element that would go up to 85 feet, and that seemed to be one of the only things that we were getting brought to the table and not at all what we were visualizing was our discussion, especially because part of the vibrant discussion around this 85-foot element was that it was an element like Chinatown, a gateway element, not a tower. The two slides offer the oversides and non-compromise from Kaiser. He went from 52,000 square feet just in the 65-foot portion of the building to now almost three times with a volume that I've calculated that would be permitted under this particular proposal if it moves forward with Mr. Kaiser's proposal, 146,790 square feet for a 233-foot frontage along Williams and for, and I'm using 105 feet for the distance going back east and west because that was kind of the middle ground where we kept negotiating. It only moved a little bit. I think we were at 108, 105, someone threw out 100. Those distances are negligible in terms of they're still gigantic compared to what we started with. I will now take a moment, and actually let me take a moment and show you a 3D look of what we're actually looking at, because looking at this on a flat piece of paper doesn't really make sense until you try to look at it in 3D. So these are massing studies that one of our wonderful neighbors, Ray, has been able to spend many, many hours staying up at night making, and I applaud him for his volunteer time in doing that. The houses you see here are in Ivy, the two houses. This is not the best representation of the solar challenges. Another neighbor will talk to that. This is looking at it from the north, kind of the north east corner, looking down on it towards the New Seasons you see over to the kind of the top left corner, the top right corner of the drawing. And you can see that a number of the homes in this case are shaded notably from the sun during a significant portion of the year that I'll leave a solar expert to talk about. This is another drawing, and you'll see the massing of the Albert in comparison to what we could wind up with the proposal on the table today. Irregardless of who builds it, there's a potential this is what we could wind up with. And this is just a view looking from the south northward at what kind of massing we're looking at. And you can kind of see some beginning elements of the shadow that houses would fall into. And here's a few more diagrams. What I'd like to do is step back for a minute and jump in. I'll now take a moment and walk you through the visualization of a more than adequate proposal we brought to the table from the community. This is more massing than Ben asked for in the pre-application phase. And so if I step forward and just read a quote on the negotiation challenges first. This was from Mike Warwick, the chair of the Neighborhood Land Use Committee and Transportation Committee, and this was a quote he had that I think was in the Willy Week. "We had no idea you would deviate from the prior practice to propose the tallest structure north of Broadway except for the Emmanuel campus, which is, as you know, is tied to a development and design compact with Elliott, in addition to being an institution with a public benefit mission," Warwick wrote. "I fear you, Mr. Kaiser, have gotten intoxicated by a literal reading of the Central Residential Code," he continued, "and forgotten that this change isn't a right but a negotiation." And so this was a comment Mr. Kaiser has made on massing in an email. "Northwest Portland, which has one of the most varied and interesting mixes of architecture and massing in the city, has 5, 6, 10, 12-story buildings immediately adjacent to single-family homes. I appreciate that in the past, the area wasn't dictated by the odd demands of single-family homeowners. Downtown used to be single-family homes. This corridor is downtown, or it certainly will be soon." And this is from an email chain that went around on approximately 10/23 on June 25th, 2013. So this is our compromise, an odd demand from the neighbors. And you'll see that what we've tried to do is come up with a reasonable massing that still gives him an opportunity to gain what we thought was the proposal on the table, which is a lot of massing along Williams, a step down to a lower height. And to try and take a moment and explain the 30-foot height that we were offering, we've actually backed his project all the way out onto the lot with the burned home so that he can gain some amazing massing by connecting all of these volumes of buildings and basically offering a lot of protection that we wouldn't have with the proposal for the neighboring homes. So he's gaining far more massing than his original project of 52,000 square feet for the 65-foot volume. It's a win-win for the neighborhood. And I think, you know, and this is not showing a gateway element, just to clarify, because the challenge that happened with the neighborhood was we felt that the gateway element was something small, like I had testified last time in council, of 800 square feet. It was some kind of element that you come into the neighborhood and you see a mass that invites you into the neighborhood, not a tower that changes the tone, that has no continuity with the existing fabric and wouldn't really be seen as a gateway to a neighborhood that's not a giant, tall neighborhood. And so here's a few other visualizations or angles, and you can see that this looks very dense. It's wonderfully dense. All of us who want density, this is a success. But it also has elements of melting into the fabric of the existing neighborhood in an effective fashion. I see this as a wonderful win-win, but in our negotiations, this wasn't even something we discussed about. We kept coming back to the same drawings that I showed you. Those two drawings were the primary ones we saw that were overmassed in size from everyone's estimation, the neighborhood associations. We even had a giant turn of almost all the members of the Elliott Land Use Committee who initially were saying, well, we're comfortable with height. As we went through the dialogue, they said, but we never talked about the kind of height that's currently on the table. And so I want to just step through a few of the other sketches. Here's another one from the south, looking north. And here's another one from an aerial view. Some of these include some of the shading elements that will come back with Ray, who's about to testify. And here's a different view, kind of looking downward from the north, and you can see the shadow onto some of the existing homes and how much larger we're offering Mr. Kaiser compared to the Albert that we've been notably uncomfortable with. And so what I wanted to close with is saying that compromise, this is what I feel the neighbors have given. We've given ground floor retail, which is really important to state that an interesting element of this is, while probably 85% of the people say they'd love to have more commercial, that doesn't mean that commercial is a giant win-win from the impacts in the neighborhood. So we see this as a win-win, even though there are impacts by doing it, changing from the R1. The height and mass increase from the 45 feet to a notable volume that I feel that we're offering him at 65 feet plus many additional units with the way that we've offered massing and lots of adaptability. If he wants to have lower ground level elements, there's room to do that. I mean, there's a notable amount of room to move in the development to make something much bigger than what he originally proposed. Then I think accountability and availability, I would like to say I think we did everything we could to get people available when we could. We had people emailing each other at all kinds of wacky hours. I mean, I think the biggest challenge in this was, and I'm not blaming Mr. Kaiser, but the timing of having him out of town for 2 weeks really created quite a challenge because Mr. Ferndon had to go back to him with many of the elements and say, neighbors are throwing this out. The only challenge was when we came back, there wasn't a change in what they were offering. And then just the last element, which I think Lee from the Neighborhood Association did a wonderful job touching on, was a sincere willingness to compromise. I think that we've gone above and beyond the call to help him create a successful project. And I really feel like what Mr. Kaiser has put on the table at this point and has made this communication fall apart is a building in volume larger than originally proposed in 2005 and then again in 2012. And so I just want to take a moment and thank Council and for giving us all a chance to speak. It's really been humbling that we've tried to come up with a new approach considering the EX we've all admitted doesn't work, that the RX doesn't quite work in these transition zones with old single-family, two-family homes. And so I still think we can get there. I just fear that if we approve what's on the table from the developer, that that's not a win-win for the community. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Questions, Mr. Van Orden? Okay. Thank you. Who's next? Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Councilors. I'm Ray Cooley, a resident of Elliott Neighborhood. And I just want to take this time to just add to what Paul Van Orden has already explained. Basically, we've taken a look collectively at what kind of massing would be suitable for this area. We're all in support, as we said, of the ground floor retail or commercial, and then higher density that would be allowed with proper massing and transition into the R2 neighborhood. We could take a look back at, I want to just show and refer back to how we came up with this massing that we feel is best. So just the very first one there, if you can, thank you. So if we look at this one here, you see the it was a thoughtful look at what the massing does, even though we don't show any shadows here. So that transition, first of all, by going 85 feet, we have that disparity, as you mentioned, Commissioner Amanda, there, with the new seasons on the west side, as well as current development on the north side of Fremont Street. Keep in mind that the north side is zoned EX, which does allow a 65-foot height. So we've matched that, so make sure that we don't exceed the height that's EX, especially because EX is to the north and would lose solar access if the property to the south was taller. We stepped down also, and you see we've proposed a 30-foot height for a good portion of the eastern, or a section of the eastern side of the site, again, to help that transition. But you could see that, and I'll show you in a future slide here, the reason why 30 feet was adequate. This view here also shows the side from the southeast looking towards the northwest over Ivy Street, and trying to give a proper mass up against the existing single-family homes. And keep in mind that we've shown this mass with the 14-foot setback against the R2 zone. So, and that will show up. So on the next slide here, you'll see that this side shows what the shading would be approximately 3 p.m. And you will see that already the house that's on Fremont there, the one at the back there that's closest to that, is pretty much fully shaded already by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So we've already lost some valuable light there. You look at the next slide overhead, and this is what would show, what we're really trying to show here is how a 65-foot height building would not impact the solar access to the homes on the east more than it would the 45 and the 30-foot masses to the east. If we went up higher than 65, it would have an impact. So as you see the shadows from the 65 and the 45-foot height that they just hit close to the edge, the eastern edge of the 30-foot height limit on that. This slide here shows a little give and take here, because even though the 45, if we were to have a 45-foot mass throughout the entire site, we would have shading along those houses to the north there. You can see the single-family homes that are at ground level there to the north of Fremont. And this is showing that with a 30-foot height on the eastern section, that they would still have a little bit, mind you, it would only be a couple hours in the morning, of sunlight that would actually hit the south face of their homes. Again, with the 45-foot height and the 65-foot height, they essentially will not get any sunlight during 6 months of the year on their south face of their building. So this proposes that although we allow a little taller height here, equivalent to the EX zone, that they would have a little bit of sunlight in the morning hours hit the south face of their building for solar access. So we just felt that after doing this study, if the height restrictions and setback restrictions are imposed as shown in this Elliott massing study here, the benefits would be that we would have a building not taller than what the EX zone currently allows along the Vancouver-Williams corridor. We'll have better solar access during solar heating hours, which is what solar access ordinances use to protect solar access to the south face of buildings. And this is defined as the hours between approximately 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. on the shortest day of the year, December 21st. We will have better transition of building mass, scale, and height from Williams Avenue to the dwellings in the R2 and the R2.5 zones. And we'll have sufficient setback equivalent to the R1 and the EX zones, which have their 60, the EX, mind you, has the 65-foot height limit and that setback requirement of 14 feet, or up to 14 feet. And we think it's a win-win because the owner-developer will gain more building coverage than in an R1 zone. They will have an overall average height higher than the current R1 zone. And they will have the ability to still have a maximum allowable FAR of 4-to-1 or close to 4-to-1 for the RX zone, which will be far greater than in the current R1 zone.
Thank you very much. Questions? Good afternoon.
Hello, I'm Elise Munson, and after listening to these great guys, we have a great shadow study, and then Paul really summarized what we've been trying to negotiate for the past 2 weeks. I would like to put a challenge on the table. I admire Ben Kaiser's work very much. His design aesthetic, I discovered it in Dwell. So I've been a big fan of his work in our community. And I think that he is so good that he can design something within these limitations that we are asking. So what I'm asking for is just a return to the negotiating table. Really listen to us. We want the height to be capped at 65 feet. There's a lot of extra gives that we have given. And we want the design to be harmonious with our historic neighborhood. And I know that we have an unprecedented ability and avenue to talk during the design review, and I applaud that. But I learned, this is coming from a novice who just learned about RX, EX, R1, that when you get into the design phase, you don't have much of a say when you're talking about massing. It's in the zoning phase that you really have a voice about massing and some of the parameters that go on before the design phase. So I want to take advantage of this phase, and I welcome the design phase, but I think now is the time to really put the line in the sand and say, can we please have 65 feet? Don't go to 85 feet. And that's mine, short and simple, after the boys.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much.
So I guess I do have a question, and that is that going down to 30 feet is less than the current height, and it's also less than the height in the adjacent R2. So that strikes me as somewhat unreasonable.
So one of the things was kind of an open discussion item at one point of putting some of the massing on the lot that is the burned-down house that Mr. Kaiser now owns. And we talked about setbacks and other elements, and it was on the table at one point that we were going to wind up with two setbacks, a setback at the remaining home that didn't burn down, that was damaged from the firehouse, so just north of the burn lot, or just east of the burn lot, and then an additional setback where we actually start the development that's on the table before us today. And so what we made really clear is that we thought we would be entirely comfortable connecting all of it, because if we had massing like we see depicted here, it would meet the needs of higher density, would have the benefit of stepping down a bit and protecting some of the existing homes that are probably not likely to change too quickly. The owners, I know them, are not in a rush to sell, and would offer a win-win in terms of much greater density than the 52,000 square foot that started off the project. So this it was a compromise. I mean, I don't feel that we ever got our element that we put on the table looked at. We kept getting handed the same proposal from Mr. Kaiser, and the line would move 5 feet. Well, we'll move the 65 mass over 5 feet. It's like, that's not where this was intended to start. This started with a 52,000 square foot building, and now you're taking advantage of the goodwill of the neighborhood association and the neighbors. So that's where it came from. I don't know that anyone would be terribly upset if we went higher, as long as we found a way to still accomplish the same goals.
Thank you.
I did want to add to what Paul said, that you mentioned, Commissioner, regarding the 30-foot. That seemed odd. The 40-foot height limit that's currently in the R2 zone, we're talking about single-family homes here, and when we do these homes in a conservation district, too, these are sloped roofs. And so height, by definition, is the average height of that sloped roof portion.
Right.
So we're comparing with something equivalent to a 30-foot mass that's, first of all, is the full depth of the site, as well as probably will not have slope roofs on this, on these.
That's,